Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, April 21st, 2014, during a live teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Practice Group's teleforum conference call. Today, our topic is the FTC versus Wyndham case. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Also, the call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. We're going to hear on topic from two experts today, but we're very pleased to welcome a guest moderator to our program today. So I'm going to briefly introduce our moderator, and he'll turn things over to our speakers. Our moderator is a long-term member and supporter of the Federalist Society in our leadership and volunteer. He is Scott D. Delacorte. He's a partner at the Washington, D.C. law firm of Wiley Rhine, and he's going to take the program from here. So with that, Mr. Delacorte, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Dean, and good afternoon. Our topic today is the recent federal district court decision in FTC versus Wyndham Worldwide. The case, which arises in the context of the hacking of Wyndham's computer systems containing sensitive customer information, including credit card information, and a subsequent FTC enforcement action, has attracted considerable attention as a test of FTC authority over data security. Wyndham challenged whether the FTC's broad Section 5 authority to police unfair and deceptive trade practices actually reached data security. And the April 7th decision suggests that Section 5 may well be that broad, but I'll ask our experts to give some context as to what the case means. Our experts today are Karen Harned and Megan Brown. Karen Harned serves as Executive Director of the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Legal Center, a post she has held since April of 2002. In this position, Ms. Harned comments regularly on small business cases before federal and state courts, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court. She has appeared on major television and radio outlets across the country, and her editorials and articles regarding issues important to small business have been published in newspapers and electronic media nationwide. Ms. Harned has also testified before Congress on the small business impact of regulation and the civil justice system. We're also joined by Megan Brown. Megan is a partner at Wiley Rhine LLP, where her practice focuses on litigation, appellate, and complex regulatory matters involving federal preemption, administrative law, and constitutional issues. She also counsels clients on emerging issues, including in the areas of cybersecurity, our topic today, national security, and privacy. Her practice involves representing clients before the federal courts and various federal agencies. I've asked each of our panelists to start us off with a 5 to 10 minute statement, putting the Wyndham case in context. And maybe we'll ask Karen to kick us off. If you could put the case in context, Karen, and give your views on whether this was a watershed case or an incremental development in cybersecurity.
Right. Well, thank you, Scott, and thank you all for joining us today. The Wyndham case really concerns what the Federal Trade Commission has been doing on data security. Interestingly, data security is something the FTC has statutory obligations to address, but it's specifically through the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act that covers financial institutions, the Fair Credit Reporting Act that regulates consumer reporting agencies, and then the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, which regulates the websites and online services that children will see or directed to them. And the agency has sought, or the commission has sought, general regulatory authority over data security for years, Congress has noted that its general authorities are limited, though. Despite that, the agency is doing what we're seeing quite frequently with the different executive agencies, which is they're looking for creative ways to assert their authority, in this case, over data security issues. Just in February, Chairwoman Ramirez testified that the FTC is using its general authorities to, quote, to promote data security in the private sector through civil law enforcement, education, policy initiatives, and recommendations to Congress to enact legislation in this area, end quote. They are relying on Section 5 of the FTC Act to support their claim that it has authority over data security. First, they're saying if a company makes materially misleading statements or omissions about data security, it is violating Section 5's bar on deceptive practices. And the second thing they're arguing, which was critical to the Wyndham litigation, is that FTC has started to police data under the Section 5 unfairness provision. According to the commission, if a company's data security practices cause or are likely to cause substantial injury to consumers based on them being substantively inadequate, they can be found to be unfair business practices. So they've published some guidance, but they have not promulgated rules for general data security practices. The lion's share of what it considers guidance is based on a series of enforcement actions, and this is really what got NFIB involved, because we had one member that was and is still fighting the FTC on this. Since at least 2000, they have brought and settled 50 or more cases against businesses for failing to provide reasonable protection for consumers' personal information. And what is mostly happening is these companies are entering into consent to see decrees with the commission, which includes signing away for 20 years the commission to come in and do biannual inspections of their business and their practices. In the case of the NFIB member that was targeted, and I'm assuming it's in the case of most of these, I think Wyndham had a similar situation. They did not know, they got hacked, and as a result of them being hacked, then there was this Monday morning quarterbacking by the commission of what they did wrong in not protecting their data. And that is particularly problematic for, the small business owners I represent to have these ever-moving, enforcement privacy standards that aren't really standards that the agency is just doing through enforcement, because they never know what the goal line is. 88%, now this is an older survey of ours, but 88% of our of small businesses think that they are being very careful when they hold the personal data of their customers. They guard their own privacy very strongly and want to do the same for their customers. But honestly, they will probably view many of them, especially the 10 and unders, having it on what they view as a secure computer, adequate. So they are not going to know of all the latest and greatest technologies that they might need to employ to make sure that no hacker could ever get into their system, and to be put in a situation, which FTC has been doing now for several years, of the agency coming in after the fact and saying, oh, well, you were hacked, and this is why you were hacked, because you didn't have A, B, C, or D in place. That is just very frustrating for the small business owners I represent, and also just that's a regulatory regime in which they cannot, be expected to effectively function. There has been movement on the Hill in Congress to get cybersecurity legislation enacted. There have been industry groups like the Chamber that have fought against, proposals that would include regulation or prescriptive standards. I think that's definitely, where NFIB would be on this. The simpler and the easier for a small business owner to comply, the better, because we do not have, legal counsel. We do not have, the in-house resources of our larger counterparts. But the legislation hasn't been enacted, so as a result, the administration is trying, again, to do it as much as it can on its own. And in February of last year, of 2013, they'd issued an executive order on cyber, which set in motion various executive and regulatory actions, including the creation of a cybersecurity framework for the private critical infrastructure owners and operators. by the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. It's supposed to help critical infrastructure owners voluntarily evaluate and improve their operations, but it also could end up being the framework that becomes a standard of care more generally, which again would be a concern for the small business owners I represent, because I would be surprised if even 1% of them knew about this executive order and this framework. And in addition, different agencies are trying to address cyber, like DOJ and FTC, DOD and GSA, but FTC definitely has been the most aggressive in trying to move to fill the void, and have been bringing these data security cases again for, you know, at least 14 years now. And with that, I'll turn it over to Megan.
Great. Thanks, Karen. I think that was a really helpful background to set the table for what the FTC versus Wyndham case is really about, and all of the different headwinds that are moving against private industry, and what the agencies are trying to negotiate with in the absence of some sort of clear consensus from Congress. You know, I feel like there's a lot of agreement that something needs to be done, but the devil's in the details, and getting something done has proven difficult. So into that void has stepped, at least in part, the FTC. So in FTC versus Wyndham, this, as Scott mentioned at the outset, it arises out of a breach of Wyndham and Wyndham franchised hotels, and the agency's desire to, in effect, hold the company accountable for that breach. In 2008 and 2010, cyber criminals operating from Russia broke into Wyndham's computer network and those of their independently owned branded hotels. They stole payment card data that the hotels had gotten from guests, and the FTC began investigating in April 2010. Wyndham cooperated, produced a ton of pages and interrogatory responses, and had several meetings. But nonetheless, FTC sued in June of 2012, making both a deceptive practices claim, with which folks I think are more familiar in the FTC data security context, as well as an unfair practices claim. And while as Karen mentioned, a lot of companies have acceded to the government's investigations here and entered into consent decrees, Wyndham fought back, and they moved aggressively to dismiss both of the counts in the complaint and aggressively attacked FTC's authority here. They did challenge the deception claim, arguing, among other things, that the agency didn't adequately plead injury and that they had to meet heightened pleading requirements under Federal Rule 9b. But the headline fight really focused on the FTC's unfair practices claim, which Wyndham characterized as really an impermissible expansion of FTC jurisdiction. So Wyndham argued that although Section 5 does have quite broad language, its scope in this context has to be viewed as narrow. They relied a lot on the Supreme Court case from 2000 called Brown and Williamson versus FDA, in which the court had rejected FDA's asserted jurisdiction over tobacco. And they found there that the Congress could not have intended to delegate a broad and sweeping decision like that in a very cryptic fashion, particularly in light of a history of congressional decisions to treat tobacco differently and agency disavowals of authority. So Wyndham grabs this case and argues that the FTC similarly can't have the broad authority claimed here, and they rely in part on subsequent statutes that Karen mentioned, like the Fair Credit Reporting Act and others, which they argue explicitly gave the FTC narrow data security authority, and they argue that if they had had this residual general authority from Section 5, Congress wouldn't have needed to enact those more specific statutes. Wyndham also goes back and says, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, the FTC repeatedly stated that it lacked certain authorities related to information practice policies or online security. And from that, they argue that FTC jurisdiction is here is like the FDA's in Brown and Williamson, where they had disavowed it. And Wyndham also argues that sort of at a meta level, data security is still such a pressing policy question before Congress that for the FTC to come in here and effectively federalize substantive data security standards is really usurping Congress's policymaking role. So that was sort of their their arguments on the scope of Section 5 authority and the limits thereon. They also say that they, as a company, lacked adequate notice of the FTC's expectations because the agency hasn't issued formal rules and should not be allowed to invoke its consent decrees as a source of substantive guidance to the private sector. Those, they say, are just not enough to put a company reasonably on notice of what particular practices are reasonable and not reasonable. And Wyndham argued that the FTC's enforcement action, as a result, is really inconsistent with basic administrative law principles and procedures, that you can only punish someone for conduct that they are reasonably aware is inadequate. So that was their big motion to dismiss both counts. The FTC, not surprisingly, opposed vigorously. They did argue on the deception claim that they had adequately pled under whatever standard applied. But really the focus of our attention today, and I think principally in the briefing, was on the Section 5 authority question. So the FTC claims that Congress gave them in Section 5 sweeping authority to regulate a variety of unanticipated practices such that those later statutes on data security don't implicitly divest them of that authority. They have to be flexible and nimble to protect consumers using these broad proscriptions in the FTC Act. They point out to the court that they prosecuted dozens of cases related to data security since 2000. They state that their previous statements that Wyndham grabs as a disavowal of authority are really more particularized to online privacy and don't squarely meet this data security question. So the FTC argues those things can't, taken together, oust them of this general background authority that they have. They also note that on the data security bills and cyber bills that Congress has been considering, those don't necessarily show an absence of current authority because some of them contain savings clauses that the FTC argues implicitly ratify an existing body of authority that the FTC must have. They also, interestingly, in a supplemental briefing, claimed that a recent enforcement action in a case called LabMD spelled out its broad theory of Section 5 authority, and they argued that because it was ratified by the full commission, it's entitled to Chevron deference and really puts to rest this question of agency authority. As to notice, the FTC says that, of course, Wyndham had adequate notice. The standard is reasonableness, and since that is the touchstone and courts have expertise in applying reasonableness, there's really no due process or other impediment to proceeding here, and that, yes, its many, many consent decrees are adequate to provide the regulated community of notice about what it expects. And then as to Wyndham's complaint about proceeding by enforcement absent that notice, they say they have broad discretion to proceed via rulemaking or adjudication in making policy and fleshing out their act, and analogize themselves to other agencies like the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration that routinely bring enforcement actions in the face of a sort of broad or vague statute, and that's perfectly okay. A lot of business groups participated in this case as it was briefed, including Karen's organization, NFIB, criticizing what they saw as incremental and unilateral regulation through settlement, and that's very harmful to American business still struggling to figure out what the federal government's going to do. But notwithstanding Wyndham's vigorous efforts on April 7th, the district court denied their motion, and really the FTC ran the table in the decision. The court affirmed the FTC's jurisdiction as well as its discretion to regulate through enforcement. It rejected Wyndham's argument that a lack of clear rules deprived the company of notice, and dismiss the notion that proceeding by enforcement violates principles of administrative law. In particular, you know, the court was unpersuaded by the analogy to Brown and Williamson. They really thought that the previous FTC statements were not some sort of unequivocal disavowal of agency authority. As to notice, the court rejected the idea that the FTC should be expected to promulgate the kind of rules or standards that Wyndham argued Homeland Security and NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, are currently in the process of doing. As an aside, I don't know that those standards such as they are the kind of discrete and tangible standards that one might expect in a situation like this, but the court said either way, consent decrees and the reasonableness standard are more than adequate. And Judge Salas accepted the analogy to the NLRB and OSHA, saying case-by-case enforcement is perfectly fine. She also sustained the deceptive practices claim that it was adequately pled under whatever standard applied. So at the end of the day, Wyndham lost all their arguments. They presently have pending a motion to certify for interlocutory appeal on the legal questions. But you can see from this case that, you know, the FTC is going to be pretty aggressive in this area. They have a green light. The court notably wasn't assessing Wyndham's actual security, saying liability is for another day, presumably summary judgment, if and when the interlocutory appeal is disposed of. But the judge notably did say that Congress and the courts will confront, quote, thorny legal issues for the foreseeable future. And so that's what Wyndham has seized on in its interlocutory appeal to bring its arguments up to the Second Circuit theoretically and say, listen, you can't allow the FTC on a case-by-case basis to make up the rules sort of post hoc, go after even the victims, as Wyndham was, of cyber attacks. So that's sort of the big picture. The judge said she wasn't giving the FTC a blank check, but the decision clearly provides a vindication of the FTC's Section 5 authorities as being a broad tool to use, and I think we will continue to see more data security cases brought under that provision. So with that, I'm turning it back over to Scott, and we can take questions.
Thanks, Megan. Both you and Karen mentioned that there is federal legislation pending that would address data security issues and the FTC's role. Do you see this decision, the Wyndham decision, as making that legislation more or less likely? And Karen, I would ask you, is legislation something that would be useful to your members where there's a lack of guidance?
Right. Well, I mean, as far as more or less likely, I just don't know, because if I'm being candid, we have not been active to date on lobbying on this issue. Again, actually, LabMD is one of our members, and they had brought this issue to our attention last year. So when we saw this Wyndham case, we wanted to get involved because of that. As far as would legislation be better, it would definitely be better than the current situation, which, as Megan said, small business owners are not going to know. I mean, they're not going to know what's going on in enforcement priorities, and as a result, retool their behavior because of what FTC is doing as far as consent decrees. They probably don't even know this is going on, the vast majority. If Congress were to do something, again, what we would want is it to be something simple so that small business owners would know, you know, that would have a good, generous safe harbor, that if you have this kind of security plan in place, or, you know, and one that would be simple and easy for, again, your employer with 10 and under, 10 or fewer employees to implement, that is really the only thing that's going to probably work for a small business owner, if I'm being completely candid. To date, I haven't seen a proposal that would probably, be that simple that has been considered by Congress, but that is really what we would need, is something straightforward that people know they can check the box and, okay, I'm good on this. Because, again, our members and small business owners generally think that they are doing a good job of protecting. So if they got hacked, that would be as much of a surprise to them as anybody.
Megan, I know you've followed closely what's going on in the executive agencies, but also the legislative arena to some degree. Do you have a sense of whether the decision will make legislation more or less likely?
I guess it depends on whether the business community continues to feel like they want to advocate for predictability, safe harbors, broad preemption, things like that, to give them some sense that they have maybe one regulator or a known universe of regulators. The issue I see now at the federal level on cyber in particular is there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and the cyber framework that's under development is supposed to be targeted at critical infrastructure, but it's going to be implemented and is being implemented across multiple federal agencies at the moment. So I don't know that it, I don't know how it will affect the appetite for legislation. It may make folks really crave a legislation that centralizes things and that creates immunities and safe harbors and looks at information sharing. But I think the decision is troubling to some because it puts everyone on notice that the FTC can proceed and sort of do this as it goes in the absence of federal legislation. So to that extent, it may make some people more willing to accept federal legislation that would provide some standards or predictability, as Karen said, folks probably really crave.
If legislation doesn't happen, what do you think of this notion that FTC consent decrees are a case law of their own? And you alluded to the argument that Wyndham made on this score, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how a consent decree is different from an adjudicated case and the different dynamic that prevails in that situation than in a normal litigation.
Mm-hmm. I think Wyndham did a very good job in their briefing of coming up with authority that says consent decrees really aren't binding. But as a practical matter, they're not the same as a litigated or even agency adjudicated case because they're the product of a settlement. The statement and recitation of facts contained in them is somewhat sanitized or agreed to. The dynamics and incentives are not the same as you see Wyndham here sort of pulling out all the stops and really fighting hard. Karen can probably attest to this, but I think a lot of the folks who end up on the other side of an FTC investigative demand don't have the stomach or the resources to fight like Wyndham has fought. And so because the incentives aren't there to have a true adversarial process leading to an independent assessment, Wyndham, I thought, fairly effectively made the point that consent decrees aren't that illuminating and shouldn't be binding or seen as anything on which someone could rely. I don't think they're specific enough that a company could say, I've gone and grabbed this consent decree from the FTC's website and I did that which it said, so I should be okay. I don't know that the agency would bless such an approach, but I think the process and the incentives are different enough in addition to the legal authority that Wyndham marshaled that says that they're just not legally, they're not the product of the same adversarial adjudicative process.
If you're a business, maybe one of Karen's members, and you're in receipt of an FTC ID after a data breach, do you have room to contest the FTC's authority now, or does Wyndham sort of take away that first line defense, or is there still hay to be made in that argument?
I mean, I think a lot of federal district courts confronting a motion to dismiss would look carefully and thoughtfully at Judge Salas's opinion. It's pretty thorough, and I think they would take it under consideration. If you're not in the District of New Jersey, I think you'd still have the arguments to be made. You'll probably fall back into the question of who has the incentive and stomach and resources to mount the fight. But until it goes up on appeal, it's certainly not final. It's a motion to dismiss. It's a pretty definitive ruling on the motion to dismiss, though. So she didn't seem to find the questions terribly close. She, as I said, FTC sort of ran the table. But I think folks should hold their breath a little bit and see if the interlocutory appeal has any legs, and then ultimately to see how this is resolved.
We've been talking for a little while now. I wonder if we should open it up and see if the audience has any questions. Dean, can you open up the line for questions?
Of course. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After that, if you have a question for any of our experts, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. So, once again, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We've got two callers with questions at this point, so let's go to our first caller.
Well, good afternoon. This is Mike Doherty, the CEO of LabMD.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what a member of the Federal Society. I mean, I could probably take up 5 hours, so I'm just going to say a couple of quick things. From a business person's point of view and not a lawyer's point of view, what is stunning to the business community, and also in my instance, the medical community, is how much power the Federal Trade Commission has with very little medical background and very little technological background. So I find the judge's decision very safe and very 37,000 feet above, because I also think what comes into play here is everyone's afraid to not save the lives of children, and everyone's afraid to not to argue against having data security. And so this is something that the Federal Trade Commission really leverages. And while the LabMD case is very, very different than the Wyndham case, because I also want to bring everyone's attention that in the press release about when they sued LabMD, they never mentioned the word breach. And in our case, they're pulling back even farther to just general data security practices. If they go into breach, they're going to lose. And if they pull back, they can never come into complete focus. So I think our case is a much larger quagmire, but I work outside the box a lot more right now, because while her ruling was disappointing, it's not surprising, because I think she's also made commentary that she's really concerned if the FTC is not going to do it, then who? And that's the bigger picture that I think slants all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I think that feeling that no one is going to do anything if the FTC doesn't, I think you're exactly right. That animated her approach to the case. And I think the FTC might even say it animates their approach to this enforcement issue they have. That it, being charitable to them, they say, we look around, we don't see anyone doing anything tangible. We have to step into this breach, no pun intended. We have to do something here to protect consumers.
Well, Scott, we have two questions pending at this point. Before we go to the next caller, let me make two brief announcements. One, the second annual Executive Branch Review Conference of the Federalist Society is scheduled for May 7th, and it is featured on the front page of the Federalist Society's website. It includes special addresses by Congressman Tom Cotton and Senator Ted Cruz. So I'd urge folks to take a look at that. It's a full-day conference with CLE, so some of our registrants are from out of town. I'd ask people to take a look at that. In terms of our upcoming conference calls, scheduled for Teleforum conference calls, tomorrow at 1 p.m., we'll be hearing a Courthouse Steps edition of Teleforum as we're discussing the Susan B. Anthony List case. That's a protected political speech case. Wednesday at 2, we'll be talking about the Argentina bond case. That's another Supreme Court case being heard this week. Thursday at noon, we'll talk about encryption. And then Friday at noon, our topic is mental capacity and capital punishment, yet another case being argued in the court. For now, of course, we're talking about FTC versus Wyndham. We've got two callers with questions. If you want to add yourself to the queue, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Let's take another call.
John Rowland, Constitution.org. We have made a case here of a government agency being too eager to leap in to try to address a problem for which it's well beyond their competence. As the webmaster of many websites that have been under persistent attack, apparently mostly from Russia, and often successful despite our best practices to repel such attacks, I can certainly sympathize with the frustration that comes with that. But when all your best practices are not enough to prevent intrusion, then, you know, it's a long leap to negligence or even from that to unfair practices. And although the court might want to create a forum where these issues can be hashed out, it should not be with a view to actually intervening, because nobody knows how yet. It's mainly a technical problem. And it's not going to be solved by a regulatory framework, because we don't know how to regulate it. So it may also be worthwhile on the side to remind all members of the forum that the original definite meaning of commerce did not include services, including hospitality or financial services or anything of that sort. And we have gone a long way from original understanding when we have agencies that try to regulate in this area.
Right. I think that you make a good point, though. I mean, that is really the big issue here, and I think that's probably one of the reasons that, this is Karen Harnan, by the way, Congress has had trouble with this, is that, you know, it is hard to know what's going to be, you know, whether it even exists, foolproof to make sure people can't hack in to your computer system, which is why, you know, we find the LabMD and the Wyndham case so troubling, because right now we're operating with this Monday morning quarterbacking where the FTC can say, well, you should have known, and to your point, they may not even, you know what would have been enough to prevent, you know, these breaches. And so I think that's why this is even more complicated, because I'm not sure the technology even exists to prevent all this. I mean, we even have the government, you know, struggling to protect its own infrastructure. So at the end of the day, whatever is done by Congress or whoever, it has to be something that people can actually administer, and I don't know if that's possible.
Karen, this is Scott Delacorte, and just teasing out a little nugget further from the caller's question and your comments on the problem being Monday morning quarterbacking, do you think in some sense that data breaches have become, through a combination of the FTC's broad standard and now in the wake of the decision, broad authority, essentially strict liability crimes that, you know, guilt is assured by the filing of the case?
I mean, it seems like that's how these businesses that are coming into the crosshairs with FTC are being treated. You know, whether it's absolutely that way as a matter of law or just in practice, that's what's actually happening in practice is what I would say, in my opinion.
Well, and to formulate it as a legal question, can a data security practice be reasonable in an instance where a breach has occurred? I don't know, Megan.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, is it res ipsa? I'm trying to think of what the term is from law school, right? The thing stands for itself. The fact that you've been breached is going to be pretty darn persuasive to some, particularly, I guess, fact finders like a jury, that something was missed. And I think that's the problem, the technology challenge you've identified. But there's a bigger, I see it as a sort of a bigger picture challenge, which is at some level, these issues are really sort of nation state and foreign policy and national security issues. And there seems to be the potential for a mismatch between that sort of threat and asking an American business who collects consumer information incident to its normal sort of mundane business operations to deal with that threat. And real questions about equity there, about how you can expect a small or medium or even large business to effectively counter what our national security folks are saying is an ever-present, sophisticated, constantly changing threat that they face. And I don't know how the FTC or the courts would adjust the liability paradigm to take into account that equity, but it does seem like that's part of the underlying challenge here, is the mismatch between the folks who are being asked to deal with it, the Wyndhams, the LabMDs, and the source of the threat, which is overseas sophisticated criminal syndicates, terrorists, and others.
Scott, we have just one question pending at this point. If you'd like to ask a question of our experts, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone.
Dean, thank you. This is Jerry Lozier from the Financial Institutions Practice Group of the Federalist Society. And my question coincidentally follows up on the point that Scott sort of made about strict liability. There is in the I heard that this was payment card information, and there is a trade association called the Payment Card Industry Association, I believe, that has data security standards. And my question was whether anyone knows whether Wyndham was compliant with those they're called PCI standards, whether the PCI standards were being complied with by Wyndham Because if not, then there would be a standard, you could say, under which, well, maybe it was negligent in not complying with industry standards. But if it was PCI compliant and is somehow liable for a breach, then I really do think you've got a problem that there is strict liability, and essentially all businesses will end up being insurers against data security breaches, and that is really an expensive proposition.
Well, you raise a good point, and in fact, Wyndham has moved for leave to file summary judgment motion, relying on its compliance with PCI standards for 2011, 12, and 13. They have independent auditor reports. Now, looking at their moving papers, it seems to me that perhaps does not obtain for them prior to 2011, and they're making this particular argument resisting the FTC's request for a permanent injunction. And I believe their argument is something like, you can't get a permanent injunction against me if I've been compliant with the standards. There's no genuine issue of material fact that I'm not currently out of compliance. There's no unfair or unreasonable business practice ongoing to be enjoined. But from their paper, which I've only briefly looked at, it seems to imply, just by omission, that perhaps that the independent auditor reports either didn't exist or didn't certify that they fully complied with PCI standards prior to 2011. But I think your point's, you know, well taken, that if that standard does exist and you can nonetheless be held liable, that would look like strict liability.
Heaven help you, yeah.
I would note it's a shame that we lost Mike Doherty, because this is an issue in the LabMD case as well, where his company has argued that they are, which was a cancer detection facility, was HIPAA compliant, and they were under a privacy, a federal regime that governed their privacy practices, and the FTC nevertheless layered on its Section 5 standards on top of that. And the initial decision there is went adverse to LabMD, and the court found space for an overlapping regulatory regime. So, good luck and Godspeed to Wyndham with the PCI argument. Who knows how it will come out, but there is some negative precedent there, and I don't know if, Megan, you can speak to that.
I mean, my instincts, given my litigation past on federal preemption, is, thinking about it through the lens of additional obligations that might come from a state AG or otherwise, and really looking at the preemptive force that would come with any standards, either agency-driven or congressionally mandated, and why, to a point Karen made earlier, sort of simplicity and predictability are important at the outset, because, to have an ouster of a peer federal agency's regulatory obligations by, say, HIPAA or a congressional mandate, you'd have to, I think, bake that in at the outset. And those safe harbors are, I think, very much needed so that people can figure out who's going to be regulating them and how, and come up with at least a limited or finite universe of potential overseers that they will have to satisfy.
We do have one more caller at this point with a question. If you'd like to join the queue, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Let's take another call.
Well, it's Mike again, since you said you thought you lost me, but I have very little faith as a business person and a member of the Federal Society that the regulatory agencies are going to solve this at all. And I argue this very outside the box. One of the reasons that I argue it like I have been in climbing all the way through this administrative process and the federal process is I don't think anything's going to happen until the business community and the medical community wakes up, because the legal community is just going to churn through it. This is destructive at the foundation of business functionality. It's going to hammer hospitals. My company closed and stopped operations 3 months ago. So it's quite devastating. It's not just a legal debate. Yet the people that have the power really don't have the knowledge to understand their impact. And one of the challenges of this is it's almost too much to take in. So I've spent a lot of time at Congress. I know my case is quite different, but I think what we have here is just a perfect storm of congressional fear on the Republican side of what to do, because we don't want to create another agency, versus if we don't, we're going to have this type of overreach going on. I'm just not sure how to solve this, but I believe as my story comes more to public light, and I'm supposed to be on Huckabee this weekend, maybe the country will understand more impact of this type of meddling. Because I also think Congress is afraid to touch it. I don't know what else to say about that, except I'm quite pessimistic in the short run about this ever going away.
Either of experts want to respond there?
Sorry.
No, I mean, you make a good point. I think, you know, when I've discussed certain things on panels and otherwise with some congressional staff, that we're working on some of the more comprehensive cybersecurity legislation, there was a skepticism about the sincerity or reality of some of the objections from the business community. So I think further education on that from the business community can't hurt. I know that the chamber has been working really hard on this. I think they are met with some skepticism by some of the folks on the Hill because the talking points remain the same. That doesn't mean the policy arguments have changed. It just means that I think there may be a little fatigue on the part of the folks who want to move something here. But I think you're right. I think a lot of this is going to be slogged out in courts and through discovery and responding to FTC investigative demands and the like.
Karen, I would ask you, do you think some of the lack of a more widespread groundswell by the business community on the issue may be due to the fact that there's a negative lottery going on, that with the FTC enforcement being really party specific, if you sort of cross your fingers and hope that you aren't the victim of a data breach, then perhaps there's not as much an issue and no reason for you to engage. And realistically speaking, the odds are with you on that. It's only going to be the minority of folks who do win that negative lottery who are in a system where they may feel that the standards aren't there and they're not getting a fair shake.
Right, and I think, again, yes, I definitely think that's the case. And then when you're looking at it from, again, a small business perspective, you know, and really small, like Main Street America, I am assuring you, 100% confident that they are doing everything they can to protect that data. So they're living in bliss, if you will, because they don't think there's any danger, right, that they're going to be compromised, not realizing or appreciating the sophistication of the hackers. And again, if you're that small, the odds of it being you are even smaller, right? Because they've been going after the larger, you know, retailers, the hackers have to date. So yes, in all of those respects, you're not going to have a groundswell of people demanding more regulation from Congress to a problem that they don't even think is going to affect them or, you know, impact them in any way.
We've got one question now pending. Let's go to our next caller.
Hi, thank you so much for all this excellent background information. But as I've been listening this entire time, I can't help but think that this is almost as if the federal government is saying to me, if I don't know how to take every step to prevent someone from breaking into my house and harming my kids or stealing my documents out of my fireproof box, I have to worry that they're going to regulate me and fine me and come after me. When, how can you ever stop this stuff on an individual basis? When, doesn't this go to the very character and nature of evil and crime, and people will do that, and we have bad actors in the world?
I would agree. I mean, that's definitely, you're speaking as one of NFIB members, I guess I would say, small business owners. I mean, yes, that, and again, that's the reason that we've gotten involved, you know, with this, because we do feel like that's exactly what the government's trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yet another question. If you'd like to ask a question, push the star button and the pound button. Looks like we now have two questions pending. Let's go to our next question.
Hi, this is Lenora Ostrowski. Instead of creating another agency, what about Congress removing jurisdiction over this particular issue from the Federal Trade Commission?
I think they certainly could. This is Megan Brown. I think they could amend the FTC Act to more clearly cabin the FTC's authority. I guess just sort of spitballing the likelihood that that would happen, it's a tough one because the FTC is there to protect the consumer, and I do see, at least to a degree, why they feel motivated to jump into some of these things. If you hypothesize a retailer, for example, who was grossly negligent, I mean, you can imagine a company that absolutely fails to do the most basic of data security hygiene. It doesn't update its operating systems with security patches. And I can see the FTC wanting to retain authority and Congress wanting them to have authority to punish that and not just leave it up to the market. The devil is in drawing those lines. And maybe there's room for Congress to come in and do something more specific than unfair business practices, as in Section 5, that would preserve the ability to go after particularly egregious cases, for example. But I do think the political will would be challenging because the FTC is, you know, acting for the consumer. It would be an uphill battle, but certainly something they could do. And they might want to cabin or come up with something specific. They've certainly done data security legislation in more specific contexts before where they've wanted to target particular problems.
If I may follow up, one of the, as I understand it, the LabMD situation was that the FTC never actually established that the data was misused or got out to people who would not preserve it, that the data, maybe Mike Daugherty can comment on this, but the data actually only reached the company that complained, but the company itself didn't release the data. I mean, I think that it is conceivable, if we can produce 3,000 pages of the Affordable Care Act, that something specific could be done to make sure that whenever the FTC was allowed to go in, that it actually affected more than two people.
Why you raise, this is Megan again, you raise a question I think that goes implicitly to the injury requirement that usually exists under FTC jurisdiction, and that's something that the parties are going to litigate in Wyndham that the court did not decide on the motion to dismiss, but really what sorts of injuries are suitable for FTC action and vindication. They're sort of standing in the shoes of consumers to vindicate their rights, and questions abound around the areas of whether those harms have to be strictly monetary. And in this country, I think it's fair to say we've not generally adopted an approach to privacy that values or monetizes a harm absent pecuniary interest. So that those issues are important and they're relevant to what the FTC is going to do. I think Wyndham will litigate those cases, questions about whether the consumers actually have been harmed by the release of their data. But again, I think that's also a politically challenging point to make because the violation of your privacy, right, the people whose information was released by Mike was hacked in the Target or Michaels context definitely feel a psychic harm to themselves. We just haven't in this country typically made that judicially cognizable. So I think that's what I think your question is sort of getting at, the question of injury and what you have to have the FTC actually be trying to vindicate in terms of money or other interests.
Thank you.
We've got about 5 minutes left with two questions pending, so let's take another call.
John Roll at Constitution.org back. Perhaps, though, we also have a problem of interventionists going after those they have before them and are readily at hand rather than against those that are beyond their reach or that are too politically powerful. When I look at the ways that breaches of data are being used to abuse people, the main problem seems to be that the kind of information that can be obtained that way is too inherently insecure. If all you need is a person's social security number, birth date, and mother's maiden name, that is not sufficient security by itself, and that's the problem with the financial services industry, not with the hospitality industry. So what is really needed there is stronger encryption and removing vulnerability by simply knowing information about people that much of which is even in the public record. And it's certainly easily, you know, something as easy as a Social Security number should never be used as a basis for identification.
A quick response from either of our experts, or should we go on to the final caller?
I think it's a fair point. Beyond that, I think maybe we go on to the next caller. Karen?
Yeah, I think next caller.
Okay, we do have a hard stop at 2 p.m. Eastern time, so let's see if we can squeeze in this last call.
I'm sorry, it's the echo chamber. I'll make you, this is Mike again, but since you asked about my input. We've lost the regulatory lottery, and that puts us in a negative spot. But as far as it's true that the FTC and their expert witnesses are focusing very much on injury and are going to have a hard time with that. But I also want to, they also focus on standards because we're pushing it. And I've been given permission to let you know this. In our deposition of the expert witness last Friday in D.C., when we asked their expert on security standards, if there's one place LabMD was to go to find out what we're supposed to do, does it exist? And her answer was yes. Harvard PhD, by the way. And then her answer was, the one place was Google. That's where we were supposed to go to see it. And I am so thankful it's under oath and in writing, because we're just exploiting the fact that people are getting perhaps injured and ignoring this entire lack of due process and regulation. And it's answers like that that help me drive this thing home. But I appreciate your forum and everyone listening.
We appreciate you calling in.
Scary.
Well, and fighting. And fighting. I mean, because that is the problem, again, that there are just so few businesses, too, that I know of that are willing to fight this to date.
Well, it's gone quite a ride.
Scott Delacorte, anything to add, or Megan or Karen?
I was just going to ask our panelists quickly, do you think Wyndham is heading to the Supreme Court, or is it too early to say?
I think if, regardless of whether their interlocutory appeal comes off, I think either it or something like it has enough juicy legal issues in there that raise this question of predictability, notice, administrative fairness, that it or something quite like it could get up there. Whether this is the vehicle, I don't know. It's certainly got enough good lawyering behind it to get it close, depending on how the interlocutory appeal goes, and who knows what would happen if they might settle or come up with some accommodation. I don't know what you think, Karen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this issue is going to make it there. And I had a question for you on that, though, Megan. I mean, do you think this is going to have to be the typical way of, or, you know, the many times it's a circuit split, and I'm just concerned if we're waiting on that, you know, we could be talking 10 years from now.
I mean, it's a pretty square question of core federal regulatory authority in an age-old act. I mean, the act itself is decades old, so it's being applied to a pretty novel situation. I don't know. I don't know what the votes would look like. It I think, depends on what the narrative of other agency action is, and if this looks like it's generating overreaching, then I think maybe. But it is the scope of a core and familiar federal statute, so, you know, Maybe we don't. I don't think we'd have to wait 10 years for a circuit split to percolate.
Well, Scott, we're up on the hour. Should we wrap things up here?
I think we should.
Okay. Well, let me thank our experts, Megan Brown and Karen Harnett, and, of course, our guest moderator, Scott Delacorte. Great job by all. We certainly appreciate the discussion, and we appreciate your time today. To the audience, thank you as well for dialing in and for your time and your thoughts. And a reminder that tomorrow at 1 p.m., as the Supreme Court hears the protected political speech case, Susan B. Anthony list, we will have a special Courthouse Steps edition of Teleform. That's tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern at this same number. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.